Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the November 2nd, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. As always, this is your co-host Chase. As always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Doing great, Chase. The season is almost upon us here, so we're within a week. You just reminded me, which is kind of crazy. Really, crept up on me.
It is coming fast. I mean, there are preseason games that have been going on for the last couple of weeks. Some of them are televised because if you don't do a secret scrimmage, you can do a televised exhibition, typically against either a Division II team or some other type of non-Division I team. UCLA, we're recording on a Wednesday. UCLA is playing tonight against Concordia University, something like that. Louisville over the weekend played one of these and lost by 10 points to a Division II team. Arizona played last night against a Western Oregon team that I have to say actually looked pretty decent for Division II basketball. I was pretty impressed. Arizona handled them at home. Great crowd at McHale, as always. I guess they had more than 12,000 attendance for it, for this kind of game, which we're not seeing at other locations around the country that I was watching. But yeah, we're getting really close. USC plays on Monday against Indian Field's former team, the Florida Gulf Coast. What are they? The Eagles?
Eagles.
So I'm just looking at the calendar here on my nifty college basketball app, which is a great app. If people don't have it, it's just called College Basketball. It's a red app with a white basketball in the middle. And I usually on opening night, there's some pretty interesting games. And I'm scrolling down. Is there anything? Is Duke playing like Kentucky? Or because we sometimes get those games. And Duke, Jacksonville. No, apparently they're not playing Kentucky. So the opening night games are not as monumental perhaps this year, but there'll be some really good games that we'll get to. You always happens in right as the season starts, you get some really intriguing matchups and teams are a little bit green. They have a lot of newcomers, I mean, especially nowadays with transfers. So we'll try to touch upon a lot of this. I guess let's start with our own school, USC. SC has now played two secret scrimmages. Nick and I do not get to watch those games, unfortunately. We have some reporting on that from Rich Rubin at We Are SC, so we're just going to steal his reporting. So thank you, Rich, for getting all the information on these games. The first game was against Fresno State. That game was pretty close, I think, at halftime. In the second half, SC pulled away. I think the one concern that was evident there was I think we were out rebounded in that game. And then we beat LMU by 10 points. I think we had a 8-point lead at halftime, ended up winning by 10. The leading scorer in that game was Josiah Sellers, who hit 5 threes. Reese Dixon-Waters had 15, and I think Drew Peterson had 15. Boogie, who was the leading scorer in the first game against Fresno State, was held scoreless against LMU, 0-for-7 from the field. You know, that's one of the things you have to keep an eye on, because that, it's like what happened last year against Miami, and then what happened in the game where we beat UCLA. I think both games, Boogie either didn't score or only scored like a point or two. And then later in the season, when we played UCLA in the Pac-12 tournament, Boogie was leading scorer and basically carried us throughout the game. So he's definitely an up and down scorer, and we really need to get consistent scoring from him this season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And like, if Boogie has a mediocre shooting night, that LMU scrimmage score kind of looks a lot more lopsided, right? Like probably closer to 20 points as opposed to 10. But no, he's a streaky player, and I think he'll continue to be streaky this year. I do think one nice component of this team, though, is just the guards are better beside him, right? So like, if he has a bad scoring night, like you got Dixon Waters there to step up. You've got Sellers, who I think is actually going to play this year, just given how lethal of a shooter he is. Andy Enfield just raved about him at Pac-12 Media Day, said he was the best shooter he's ever coached, college or pro, which is quite a statement. I mean, he's coached a lot of really good shooters. So,
Yeah, so and that kind of dovetails right into maybe the high the you know the headline of the preseason, which is SC is going to be starting like a four guard
Right.
rotation if you include Drew Peterson as a guard, which I think guy kind of makes sense. I mean, he plays point guard sometimes. So we're going to look different than we have in the last few years. You know, like hopefully the shooting will carry us. I mean, we've seen demonstrations of Boogie, even though he's, you know, hot and cold, he's can be a very good shooter. Reese Waters, especially toward the end of last season, was a very efficient 3-point shooter. We know like a guy like Harrison Hornery can shoot threes. We know that Drew Peterson, even though he's gone up and down at different times in his career, he closed out last season shooting very hot from three. So there, we definitely have 3-point shooters on this team. They're going to have to carry us, I think, because we don't really have. I mean, our guards can kind of slash to the basket too, but we don't have a like a true kind of point guards out there. So it's kind of a, an odd lineup when you start four guards and none of them are a point guard.
Yeah, definitely. I do think it just goes to show how Andy Enfield's pretty adaptable with his personnel. Like, I think one thing in the past, like, he could have played small and done like things like you tell me at the floor during the 2020 season. But given kind of the lack of quality, at least upperclassmen bigs on this current roster, like, he's adapting. He's playing. You know, he's carving his system up to kind of fit his players' strengths, and I think that's a really positive thing for this team, no doubt. And one kind of interesting thing I was just thinking about, like last year's team, they didn't really like have, you know, the marquee win, right? Like, I guess they had the UCLA win, right, where Drew got hot, but given the, and they didn't lose like a ton of bad games either, right? And it was kind of a low variance team. And with all the 3-point shooting, you might have some pretty high variance outcomes where they lose, you know, a few bad games, but then the shooting just carries them, you know, maybe to a win like at Pauley or at McHale or something like that.
Yeah, that could be, that could definitely be interesting. The, you know, the schedule this year is not going to be as easy, like not going to be as friendly as last season's. I think last season was probably a little too friendly out of conference. We didn't, you know, we didn't really see kind of that marquee matchup out of conference because we had the game against Oklahoma State was canceled and because of COVID. Hopefully we don't have COVID cancellations this year. Gosh, I'm just thinking about that. But we, you know, some of the teams we were thinking, oh, these might be, you know, stronger teams. Like San Diego State ended up pretty strong at the end of the season. I think they ended up top 25 team in KenPom. But like, you know, they kind of were up and down during the season, and like not long after we beat them, they were on national television just getting blown out by Michigan and Ann Arbor. So it didn't look so good. You know, not only does SC have Auburn this season, and you know, that's at Galen. Oh, and I think LSU last season got canceled. Or Kansas, it was Kansas that we were supposed to play last year, right?
Kansas. Yep.
Yeah,
Yep.
so we missed those two games. So this season we'll have Auburn, and then we have the Maui Invitational, and that starts with BYU. But the other teams in that tournament include schools like Tennessee and, or not Maui Invitational. Why am I saying Maui Invitational? The
Battle
Atlanta
for
Battle for
Atlantis.
Atlantis.
Yeah.
I think I was literally, everyone, I was just in my Maui for a vacation, and I'm sorry, man. I think I'm a Miami hangover here. The Battle for Atlantis. So. I know I've looked at the bracket in the past, but you know, these are good teams. I think the ACC is represented by NC State, which is kind of like the low on the lower end of who's there. But the rest of the teams
Yeah.
in this tournament, you're looking at Butler, Dayton,
Yep.
Kansas, USC, Tennessee, Wisconsin. So you're probably looking at like out of these eight teams, probably six NCAA tournament teams is, you know, five or six legit NCAA tournament teams, depending on, you know, how, for example, NC State does this year, BYU does this year. you know, things like that. Wisconsin seems to make the tournament every year. Tennessee will certainly make it this year. Kansas will make it unless they decide to. I guess they imposed a penalty on themselves today or yesterday, but it was not a no postseason ban. It was like I think Bill Self has to like miss four games or something like that. So there's going to be, you know, these teams are, you're going to see five, six teams out of this field probably in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's a great field, and we'll kind of get into some of these preseason scrimmages the other night, but or later in the episode here. But Tennessee played Gonzaga the other night and just wiped them off the floor. So they're looking like a top 10 team for sure. And
yeah.
Kansas, right? I mean, Self every year seems to rebuild it. I think they're probably going to be a top four seed again this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
lots of talent for sure.
Yep. Okay. So what are your biggest takeaways from the information you'll be able to glean from the two secret scrimmages that SC had against Fresno State and LMU?
I think it's just the shooting's improved from last year's team. Like even if Boogie and Drew are kind of, you know, the same dude as they were last year, we do have like legitimate options and every guard can shoot at least maybe Kobe Johnson can't shoot. I think the jury's kind of still out there, but I think he has a chance to shoot. So I think like what we do wish we had Vince, because he would just alleviate a lot of the concerns like rebounding. And you know, they're trying to make it work without him, and you know, hopefully they can just get enough shooting and just, you know, kind of do the Villanova thing, right, where they just take a bunch of threes and let the chips fall where they may.
Right. And you cut out there a little bit, but you're saying basically if we had Vince for the season, things would probably look a little bit different.
Right.
But, you know, we're going to, you know, I think obviously we're going to rely heavily on Joshua Morgan, especially at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Miyagu has not been practicing for the most part, as we understand it. We don't really know why either. We don't know if there's an injury there or there's some other issue. Andy, at the Pac-12 media day last week, Andy said he thought he'd be back practicing at the end of last week, but I don't think that's the case. So it is kind of, you know, concerning that you have a team already that's, you know, 12 scholarship players, and basically the two tallest players on the team are both not able to play. So,
Right.
Luckily we have, you know, Kajani Wright can play the five also. In a real pinch, Harrison Hornery can play the five. So we have bodies we can throw down there, and we're not like some teeny tiny team. I mean, they're, you know, guys like Reese Dixon Waters, who's not ideally, you know, who's built, you know, height wise like a guard, but he's a well built guy. And if you need him to play the four, he can play the four, especially on defense. So, you know, if you need guys to bang around, he can bang around. So
I would even take it further than that with Dixon Waters. Like, I know I mentioned this definitely offline, but, you know, maybe on the pod too. Like, I would play him at the floor. I mean, he would be a total mismatch in terms of attacking closeouts off the dribble against bigger guys, or even just stretching the floor out. And he's got kind of the strength where he'd be a hard guy to post up. So I think, like, there are some advantageous lineups for sure with him at the four.
Yeah, and we don't really know exactly how this, like, four-guard lineup looks. Is a plan to play Drew at the four, or is a plan to play Reese at the four? Because, and we should probably mention the five starters will be Joshua Morgan at the five, and then Boogie, Drew, Reese, and Kobe Johnson. Now, presumably Kobe is going to play kind of like point guard, but I don't know if he's going to guard opposing point guards, and he's not short. I mean, he's probably legit 6'7". His brother, who, you know, was one and done into the NBA, is like a legit 6'9" guy. And Kobe's been growing. He might still be growing. So, you know, it's not like we have a small lineup. I mean, goodness. Right. I mean, you know, Drew is like 6'10", so, or 6'9", you know, so we have a tall lineup. It's just, we don't have like conventional heft at some of the positions.
Right. I mean, like UCLA's played Jaime Jaquez before, and he's certainly not 6'9". He's like a 6, probably 7.5 guy, right?
And
So,
he's going to be their four man. I mean, he creates
yeah.
matchup problems. You know, in modern college
Right.
basketball, you don't necessarily, we talked about this, you don't necessarily always want to have like two genuine bigs. And there were moments last season where Isaiah Mobley, who I think is a very strong post defender, is kind of put in a tough position because he's forced to guard more perimeter guys, like perimeter
Yep.
type fours. Now that causes a mismatch on the other end of the court, but you know, we've talked about that. So looking through just the stat line, the LMU game, which was the closer game, Joshua Morgan had 4 points in that game, 2 for 7 shooting. So he struggled a little bit with shooting. Kobe Johnson hit some shots, scored 12 points. That's a big improvement. I think in the Fresno State game, he didn't score. Reese
Yep.
Hickson-Waters again showing. I think, you know, my hope on Reese is that I really hope that by the end of the season, he's the best player on the team. I think if by the end of this
Yep.
season, and it's not because of injury, because of legitimate, like, you know, everyone's healthy and he just, you know, he keeps getting improving. If he's the best player at the end of the team, I think this team would be pretty good. Best player on the end of the season, I think this team would be pretty good. He scored 15 points. Boogie held scoreless. Drew scored 15 points. Trey White scored 8 points. You know, gosh, we haven't really talked about him. I think, you know, in this four guard lineup, he is going to be a crucial piece.
Yeah, I think so. And I know like Chris Kapka in an interview and said he's got like he's has moments where he flashes the one and done talent, but he's not really consistent with it yet. So I think that'll probably he'll have some ups and downs in his level of play this year, but he's got a lot of ability in terms of, you know, leaping ability, quickness off the dribble, first step, and he's enough of a shooter to keep defenses honest. So yeah, it definitely kind of seems like a really good like sixth man spark plug this year where you can step into the starting lineup next year.
Ozias Seller scored 17, which we discussed, 5 for 6 from three. Kajani Wright scored 2 points. He had three rebounds, I guess. You know, Kajani's going to be an important cog here, especially early on, because he's going to need to give us minutes of the five. He's going to need to give us fouls, you know.
Yeah,
You know,
right.
he's going to be a really important part of the team. So really more, I mean, I really hope he comes in with the mentality of, look, I'm here to, you know, come in defense first and rebounding. I don't think that would be a huge stretch for him, because like that was really his role last year at Sierra Canyon. I mean, it was he had trans kind of transitioned in roles, and they had their perimeter guys, and he was really kind of like, look, I'm going to be the guy around the basket.
Yeah, and he's just a terrific kid too. I mean, you hear him in the interviews and he's just super well spoken and polished and talks about, you know, like one of the reasons he chose USC was not only to stay close to home, but like he wants to get into like real estate and they have a really good program for that. So I don't think he's a selfish kid at all. Definitely seems like the kind of kid who will just embrace his role and play really hard.
Yeah, and then Harrison Hornery at 10 points. He had a couple threes, 2 for 2 from three. You know, we'll see what Harrison can do on defense, what he's being asked to do. You know, if he's going to be asked to play to guard the four on defense, and might have to get out to the perimeter. We're going to see how that works out. I think he can be an effective player on offense, no question about it. But his what he can do on defense and rebounding will be key. And then Malik Thomas, who had a great game apparently against Fresno State. I think he led us in scoring or second in scoring. Only put up 2 points, 0 for 3 from the field. So he's been up and down. It is a little, you know, when you take a guy like Malik Thomas, we're just not sure what he's going to give us. Is this going to be like the max situation from last season? Is he even going to get those kind of minutes? You know, there's not. Unlike last year, there's not like a whole bunch of like, you know, freshmen on this team that aren't going to play. I mean, we're basically everyone's looking to play, including, you know, let's say the least heralded freshman that came in, Ozias Sellers, you know, is leading us in scoring in this game. So
Yep.
everyone is gunning to play this season, you know, everyone is healthy. So you know, I'm not sure the minutes that Malik gets, he's going to have to make the most of if he wants more of them.
Yep, totally agree with that. We'll see what happens with it. I think there's definitely a guard crunch, right? Like you we just have a lot of guards that are looking to play. Like we've got like we're a little thin at big, right, with the Vince thing, but some of these guys are kind of going to get cut from the rotation, like at least one of them, you'd have to think. And I'm not saying it's going to be Malik, and we'll just have to see how it shakes out. But I think with Ozaia, you just know the translatable skill of shooting is there. And I think that kind of gives him a leg up to some degree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit. This is like a hard transition, but let's talk a little bit about some national stuff and who we've looked at as preseason top 10 teams for each of us. And I think we each did a list offline. I think they're subject to adjustment because there's been some different developments since then, including that Tennessee game you mentioned. But I think we had seven teams in common, and then we each had three different teams that didn't make the other person's list. So I will read the list I gave to you. Had Duke number 10. I would probably keep them in that range. They lost a preseason game to Houston, as I understand it. That was a secret scrimmage, so there's no video. I think Houston won by about a dozen points, but I don't think Lively played for Duke. I mean, they were missing a couple guys. Now, Duke is kind of, they're a bit of a wild card because they're really, really depending on these freshmen. And this is not like there's no Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett on this team. So I think it's a big question mark for them. And obviously Krzyzewski is no longer the head coach there. So I have them at 10. We'll see. Okay. I had Tennessee at number 9. So after watching that game, I think obviously it warrants them moving up. Maybe we'll talk about that after we go through our list, and because I think Tennessee will move up on mine. Kentucky number 8. The interesting thing here with Kentucky is that Shibue has been held out so far from the preseason stuff. They had a preseason game on television the other day. Shibue didn't play. They look pretty good. No longer are we really dealing now with the Calipari teams that are just loaded with one and done freshmen. There's a couple potential one and duns on this team. I'm not exactly sure how big their role will be. Shibue is obviously favored to be the National Player of the Year. He was last year. They have Sevier Wheeler back, who's a transfer from Georgia, played point guard for them last season. So as far as newcomers go, they have Chris Livingston, and they have Kayson Wallace. Those guys are potential. I don't know where they stand. Do you know where those guys are right now in NBA draft?
Wallace is like kind of late top 10 to maybe like late lottery, and then Livingston is kind of more like late first round, I guess. I'd say.
Okay. And they're both, 6'5" a little, Wallace a little bit shorter, Livingston a little bit taller. They're not watching them in the All-Star games last season. They're not like guys that just completely come and dominate the game. So, I think they're both talented and they maybe they'll have big seasons, but it's just not as clear to me.
Wallace, I'll throw a name out there for those who watch Kentucky over the last several years. He's kind of like Ashton Hagans was as a sophomore. So defense ahead of offense, but not like, this elite offensive player that's going to change your, trajectory.
Yeah. Now they have Obi Toppin's brother, so Jacob Toppin. I think he'll probably have a pretty good year. He did some things in the game that I watched that I was impressed with, but he's never really kind of elevated his game to the point where he's going to be like a 15-point game guy. I don't know if that's ever going to be the case. They have Damon Collins, and then they have CJ Frederick from Iowa, who missed last season, right? So he's coming in. He's more of a steady shooter for them. He scored, I think about 10 points a game, I think, for Iowa a couple of years ago. Maybe only 8, but if she plays not in the lineup, Kentucky is kind of like, maybe top 25 type team. I mean, not super impressive. Shibue is kind of supposed to carry them higher. So I have him at number 8. I'm still not sure about that ranking. UCLA, we've talked about at length in the prior podcast. I had them at number seven nationally. I think that, look, they've got two of the best players in the country at their position. Tiger Campbell at point and Jaime Jaquez at the four. And they have, you know, two of the best freshmen at their position, Amari Bailey at the two and Adembona at the five. I have Arkansas at the six. Now, Arkansas got blown out in a preseason game against, who did they play in that game?
Texas,
who is Texas, not in my top 10. Ugly game for Arkansas. It was, now I don't know if that game was kind of just being used to kind of, so Arkansas's got a strange situation, right? Because there's a lot of talent supposedly on this team, but I think they have like 11 newcomers because of all the transfers they took. And for example, like they, you know, Jalen Graham, who's been in Arizona State, had closed out last season very strong. He transfers there. They start him at the five or at the four, and he played like 4 minutes after starting, you know? So it was a kind of a weird rotation. They have freshman Anthony Black and then Jordan Walsh, who played at the same prep school as Julian Phillips last year. I think Walsh was the leading scorer for them that game. And then they have Nick Smith as well. So they have these three freshmen that they're kind of counting on to be catalysts. It just didn't come together against Texas at all, but maybe that's not fair because maybe they're not quite ready and they'll get better over the course of the season. I don't know. Texas freshman, Dylan Mitchell, I think, was the best freshman on the court that game. So I don't know. Do you have Arkansas or Texas on your list?
I had Arkansas at nine, and I would definitely move them out after that. I think these preseason scrimmages really matter. Like, I'm all in on these, like, mattering, because I know, like, USC in the 2019 season did really poorly in these, and they've done better in recent years. So, yeah, I think Arkansas, I would definitely bump them out. And it's not like they lost by two. They lost by 30. I mean, it was.
Yeah, and I'll let you talk more about your entire list and your thinking on it.
Sure.
I have North Carolina at my number four. Now, for those of you who don't remember, they were the national champions last year until they weren't. But I think that they had one of the biggest halftime leads in the history of the NCAA tournament and championship game. And they've got essentially, you know, 85% of their scoring back from last season, including Armando Bacot. They add our point guard that got stolen from us, Seth Trimble. I don't know how many minutes he's seriously going to get, but they're going to be, and they also add Pete Nance, transfer from Northwestern, who's, you know, whatever. But you know, they did not have a great regular season last year, and I think they were an eight seed. But they, you know, they came alive. They beat UCLA in the tournament. So and then they made it to the final four in the championship game, and then they had a 20-point lead. They almost won the national championship. So they're not to be trifled with, but I don't know the consistency is going to be there this season. You know, and so we'll have to see about that. It reminds me a little bit of what the UCLA situation from last year when they made it to the Final Four and then, you know, had that crazy game with Gonzaga. And then the following season, everyone's like, oh, they're top three team, and they weren't really top three team. Okay, I have Baylor at number three. I'm not 100% on this one, but I do like the personnel Baylor has, and it's you know, the Baylor's just been so steady the last several years. So Cryer's back, Flagler's back. They bring in freshman Keontae George, Flothamba back. I'm not going to pronounce Jonathan's last name.
JTT.
I'm going to let you do that when it's up to you. Number two, Gonzaga, who's going down on my list after that game. I guess after you do your analysis, we'll just talk a little bit about what I saw from Gonzaga, because it was an interesting, you know, watching that team. And number one is Houston. And I don't think Houston's a blowaway number one. I just think it's like, they can beat anybody on any, you put them on the court, they can beat anybody on any game, and they might be the favorite every single time. So without some other like super preseason powerhouse, I really like what they've done. I love Kelvin Sampson. So that's my top 10. Do you want to run through yours?
Sure. So I haven't thought it through like super recently. So I'll kind of run through my old list and maybe knock a few teams out, and throw a few more teams on here. So I guess I had Purdue at 10. I would probably put Texas there now after their performance against Arkansas. I was a little skeptical of how like impactful on winning Dylan Mitchell would be, just because he's a he's rated like super high in all the services, but he's like this really good athlete three player. And sometimes those like small forwards don't really impact college ball year one. But he definitely outperformed Anthony Black and Jordan Walsh. And they've got Timmy Allen coming back. It feels like he's been in college forever. Same with Marcus Carr, but I don't think Texas will win the title or anything like that, but given their like athleticism and experience, and Chris Beard will have them
And they do
wreaking
have, you know,
havoc.
they have
But
Tyrese Hunter transferring in from Iowa State.
that's right. He's a really good player. Like, he's not a shooter, but Tyrese can really pass and get after it on defense. So they have lots of dogs on that team. I think they'll be really good early and maybe not quite as strong late in the year. But I would put them at 10. At 9, I'll go with Kansas. Self is just so good year after year. Jalen Wilson really came on in Big 12 play last year. And even though they're losing, Brown, Agbaji, and McCormick, DeJuan Harris had a lot of good tournament moments as well. And they've got some freshmen. Zach Clements is a He's a rising sophomore here, fairly highly touted guy. So I think they got MJ Rice from Prolific, who I think could be like a sixth man for them. So they got enough firepower there, and Self just kind of figures it out. So I'll put them at 9. At 8, I will go with Creighton. They were 9 seed last year, have pretty much everyone back. I think they lost one guy. Ryan Hawkins, I think, is gone, but they added Baylor Shireman, who might be the best transfer in the country. He was at South Dakota State, got a big NIL deal from Creighton. Lights out shooter. He'll be, I think, one of the best players in college basketball this year. Arthur Kaluma on the wing. He's like a jumbo forward who came on really late. And then Trey Alexander was a blue chip guard, like ranked top 40 and closed the year strong as well. So they have a lot of like really talented rising sophomores, added a key transfer, and McDermott's a really good offensive coach, so I think they're up there for me. I've got Kentucky above them. Echo your comments. Like, they have enough NBA talent on their team, and then Ashibwe gets right, like he's National Player of the Year guy. Sevier Wheeler was kind of up and down, but there's just enough combined talent and experience with them. I think you got to put them up there. After that, I would go with Gonzaga, and this might be like kind of high for Gonzaga, given the way they looked against Tennessee. But you still got like Timmy, Malachi Smith, Julian Strother, a bunch of names, right? Nolan Hickman. I don't really trust their guards other than Malachi Smith, and there's a difference between averaging 19 a game at Chattanooga and being a consistent like top guard in the country. And I've got concerns about them defensively. But I think kind of few earns the benefit of the doubt there, but I would not put them as like a top three team, certainly after what we saw with what they did. After that, I've got UCLA. Just echo your sentiments, like really a lot of talent, a lot of experience. I think the question with them is like, can Bailey be like a legit superstar, and can Bona be that? I don't think they can, or else I'd have them higher. But like Hawkes, I think he'll kind of mean regress on his shooting upward. He didn't have a great 3-point shooting season last year, but I think over the course of his career and like how he shoots free throws, I think he's capable of upping that percentage. And then Campbell doesn't turn the ball over. I think he's the second best point guard in college basketball. So I've got them. And I've got 4 spots left, I think. So I've got UCLA at 5. I'll go with Tennessee at 4. Really like what they did in that scrimmage against Gonzaga. Zakai Ziegler is really good, just a damn good player. I thought they'd lose a bit when, Kennedy Chandler declared. Kenny Chandler is really good, but Ziegler has kind of seamlessly stepped into that lead guard role and is really good defensively too. They just looked so polished in that game. I mean, Vescovi hit shots. They didn't like expect like Julian Phillips to play like some superstar role. So I think Barnes did a really good job building out that roster, with Jimmy Haslam coming in with the NIL deals too. So I got Tennessee there. And then top three, I've got UNC at three. Echo your sentiments. I think Pete Nance is actually a really good ad for them. He was 15-7-3 at North Carolina and shot 45% from deep on three attempts. So he's going to fill that manic role pretty well and might even give you a little bit more defensively. I mean, and they went to the title game last year and, Bacot's back, Davis is back, and Love's back. So there's a lot to like with those guys. And then I've got Baylor at two. Flagler, LJ Cryer, just phenomenal shooters. Keontae George is going into kind of a perfect situation for him. Like, he's kind of the number three guard, even though he's a top 10 recruit there, and he can really, really shoot. So they just have a lot of skill at the guard spots, and their bigs just know what they're doing and really just can fill those roles and rebound and defend. So I've got them at two, and then same top team as you. I've got Houston. I think Marcus Sasser would be my preseason player of the year. And you just know that team is going to defend. They've got a lot of key pieces back. They have two freshmen that are ready to play and translatable to winning right away. So with Jairus Walker and Terrence Arsenault, Juwan Roberts is back, one of the best rebounders in the country. There's just they do lose Kyler Edwards, but Jamal Shedd, the terrific lead guard, also doesn't turn the ball over, and makes his free throws too. So there's enough there. The talent, with their freshmen, I think they have the best player in the country, and I think they play really hard defensively. Not too many weaknesses with them. I think like the weakness with them, if to the extent they have one, is there's no like top five pick, but I think you could say that about all these teams, right? Like the top, there's no like Duke, right? And, even then with Paolo Banchero, like lost to UNC and didn't have like a phenomenal like regular season. So I think with these top teams, like Duke and Kentucky lacking the clear top 10 guys, I think there's a lot of room at the top for these more experienced teams.
One team I think you did 11 and I did 9, so we between us we hit 10. But the team I forgot was my number 16, which is Arizona, who played a preseason game last night I mentioned. So their lineup is they have Creasa starting at the one, and then they have Texas transfer Courtney Ramey starting at the two, Pella Larsen starting at the three, and then he was kind of substituted for early with their transfer from I can't even remember where he's transferring in from.
Campbell.
Campbell, right? Cedric Henderson Jr. And then they have their bigs, right? So they've got Tabellus and Balo. So up front, Arizona looks like a monster up front, because you get it's just hard to get better than Tabellus and Balo. Plus they've got Visser coming in as a Euro. He looked huge on the court. He's skilled. So they looked just absolutely stellar on the front line. It's a little different when it comes to that backcourt. Creasa had another, he had another scoreless game. So I don't, it's like, if you were to count that as a regular season game, I mean, it's like, now he's like 14 of the last 16 games where he didn't hit a 2-point field goal. And a lot of them, he was, didn't hit any field goals. Courtney Ramey hit a couple threes, but this is against the defense that was really, he didn't look, he looked better than I thought he looked in their scrimmage, but not super. Cedric Henderson, he had some shots kind of slashed to the basket, but he didn't hit shots that I mean, he shots that were like good against low competition. He did not hit shots that I thought were going to be, you're going to be able to hit against high major teams. So I do question him as like a legit, like major minutes guy, you know, and maybe that's because coming in from Campbell, it's going to be an interesting transition. I don't think he's where Justin Kyrie was last season. Kylan Boswell, now he's coming off injury, so you got to be fair to the kid. Also, he didn't score in the game, but according to his self-reporting, like Boswell's like 17 years old until March. That's like the official age. So maybe that's the case. He doesn't look 17 to me, but I mean, he would be, I think last season, Amani Bates was the youngest player in I think in Division One, and he turned 18 in like January of the season. Boswell would be even younger. So I know you didn't respond to me offline. Are you buying the age thing there?
I'm buying, yeah, what's reported. I mean, I don't think like Jared McCain is like really old for his class and older than Kylan Boswell. So I thought that he would be the one of those guys that would reclass, but Boswell decided to do it. And I don't know if he just like, you know, doesn't want to play high school basketball or Tommy Lloyd was worried about his guard depth or whatnot. But and with him, like he's not, he's physically like kind of stocky. So I don't think like the physicality aspect of college basketball will really hurt him. I just don't know if he's that good. Let me throw this thought back to you with Arizona, right? Like, you'd probably agree that Dalen Terry was one of the better perimeter defenders in college basketball and that Christian Coloco was one of the best shot blockers. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. And also, just before you even finish your question,
yes.
I was listening again to our last podcast when we talked about the Pac-12 preview, and you made the point about their defense and how it was already ranked last season, like number 21, I think, in KenPom.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I mean, their defense is going to get a lot. It's going to get worse, significantly worse. And yeah, I mean, they're going to have problems on defense, especially on the perimeter. Particularly because it increases not going to be able to take all these flop charges. I know that Ramey has a reputation being a 3-and-D guy. So maybe he'll like step up and he'll provide pretty good defense, but yeah, I'm not, they've got a lot of guys, you know, the Pelle Larson, and you know, I'm not thrilled with him as a three on the defensive end, and nor Cedric Henderson. So yeah, I think they're going to be some teams that play them that are like have some savvy guards that they're really going to struggle with.
Yeah, and that's really my point again, right? Like they finished 5 in KenPom, right? They had the number 7-0 and number 21-D. And they're losing two key defensive pieces and not really replacing that. So if they dip down and they're not in the top like 40 defensively, it's just hard to see them like being a top 10 team, right? Their offense would have to be so elite, right? And maybe it is, but their offense was really good last year, like number 7, and they were still like, you know, number 5. So and that's my concern with them is like I could see them, envision them easily as a top 10 offensive team, but I'm not sure who's guarding anybody. Like maybe they just do like a pack line with Ballo at the back and try to dominate the defensive glass. But do they have a plus defender on that team? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I guess maybe Ramey is the guy. I don't know either. It's a legit concern. And the only reason I ranked them number one above UCLA in the conference is because of what Tommy Lloyd pulled off last season with, you know, clearly he had talent on there, but he had to bring it to the surface because it wasn't quite as apparent when Sean Miller was there. So he really pulled that talent up. I think he'll be able to do a lot. Look, there are still a lot of good passing ball movement in the game they had last night against that Western Oregon team. And they won comfortably. But yeah, there were times when Western Oregon was scoring and I was like, oh, this is going to be, you know, you get into a regular season, this is going to be an issue for them and something they're going to have to confront.
And quite frankly, like lots of these teams are going to have issues at the top defensively, right? Like I don't know who Kyle Filipowski on Duke's going to guard, right? Like that dude, like he's going to get totally cooked and such. And then Arkansas was supposed to be a good defensive team, and Texas just dropped 90 on them. You know, lots of these teams are flawed. That just happens to be kind of Arizona's weakness in this whole thing.
Yeah. So let me talk a little bit about, I guess, both Gonzaga and Tennessee, because I watched that game and had some observations about Gonzaga. So Timmy is who he is. He's a fantastic player, and I think there's not even a universe that exists that he's not like a top three offensive player in college basketball this season. It's hard to even imagine. That after him, though, the roster looks very kind of like it doesn't have a lot of like alphas on that roster, right? So Rasir Bolton is a really nice shooter, and Julian Strother is a pretty good shooter who can also slash a little bit. So, and within their roles, they fill nicely into their roles, but they're not like tremendously raising the level of the team overall, because they're not kind of like kind of take over the game type players. And the problem they're facing now is they don't have that guard. They don't have those guards to do that now. And I don't think that Nolan Hickman is ready to rise to the occasion. They brought in Malachi Smith, who I'm not positive is, look, I think he can do really well in like WCC games. I'm not sure if Malachi Smith is like the guy you really want, in the, like when Gonzaga plays, one of their kind of like big out of conference games again, against like Texas or, Kentucky. So, I mean, just so everyone knows, in the first, if you look at their first six games, four of them against Michigan State, Texas, Kentucky, and Baylor, I think those are going to be tough games. I mean, even Michigan State, I think it's going to be really tough for them, because they don't have just like take over the game type guards like they've had in the future. And that was kind of like the observation I made to you offline, Nick, was just like they're just missing guys they used to have. There's no Suggs, there's no like Sabonis. I guess you could say like Timmy's kind of that role, but Timmy's like has a very defined role on the team. They don't have just the guys that they paraded through the program that have been like, it turned out to be NBA guys and just kind of like surprise everyone. They don't really have that here. And, it's not even clear Timmy is an NBA guy. So I'm not sure if there's like a true NBA player on this Gonzaga team. I guess Strother is supposed to be, but he came back to school because I think he was struggling with draft projections. So that's kind of my observation there. What are your thoughts on what you can see there?
Yeah, and you can throw Chet Holmgren into the mix too, right? Like he was really good for them last year. He was also the kind of guy who could really impact the game without putting up huge stats, but he was awesome for them in lots of games last year. And then when he got into foul trouble in the tournament, that like kind of killed them. So yeah, like it's just they don't have Nembhard was kind of a stabilizing force for them, and quite frankly, he's just a better player than like Nolan Hickman. Right, he's just better. It is what it is. Like Hickman, you can maybe say like will be the better pro eventually, but right now, like Nembhard is clearly superior, both as a facilitator and scorer.
And I don't know if Hickman ever will be the better player eventually. It's not clear to me. Yeah, the list I'd given you was, Nembhard, Jalen Suggs, Josh Perkins, Nigel Williams-Goss. And then you have guys like Brandon Clark, Hachimura, Zach Collins, Petrusev, even Corey Kispert. They're just not, they don't have those kind of like, hey, I'm going to come out and score 30 right on you. Like Bolton can score 30 because like people leave him open and he hits threes, but like, he's not going to take over the game. If you need to shut down Bolt, if you're like, our goal of this game is to like guard Timmy and shut down Bolt, and you can do that. It's not like, he's going to just dominate the game no matter what. Now, that all being said, it is Gonzaga, it is Mark Few, and they do have a nice roster of talent. I mean, we haven't talked about Antoine Watson. He's a pretty good player, and Hunter Salas has not really turned out to be much, but maybe Efton Reed, the transfer from LSU, will turn out to be something more. Dominic Harris, who obviously played high school basketball with the Mobley brothers, maybe he'll get some time this season. So there's, they've got guys to compete, but yeah, this is just doesn't feel quite as, and you can feel and they can sense in that Tennessee game, you could just sense that like Tennessee was just not scared of these guys and they're just going to go at them. And let me talk about Tennessee really briefly, not because I don't know if Tennessee's like, oh, they're like a number three, top three team. I do think there's probably like a legit top 10 team. I love Tyreke Key from Illinois State. He just kind of like scrappy guy. I love to have a guy like that on your team. Phillips, obviously, you know, just hit his open threes throughout the game, especially late in the game. But what's funny about that team is they've got guys that were like, you know, kind of ranked recruits from earlier years that hadn't done a lot. And, you know, they're kind of just staying in the program. And so they started Plavsic at center, and he had a really tough game, and he really caused problems for Gonzaga, Timmy and stuff. And, you know, Ziegler played with, the best guard on the court, to, you know, the ball handling guard on the court. And so, you know, they just, and then Nakamura too. So, or Namakora, how is it? It's Namakora, right? Kamakura. How do you pronounce Olivia?
I think it's like Nakamwa.
Is it Nakamwa? Okay. Nakamwa, yeah. So anyway, Tennessee's got a lot of pieces that are pretty high level guys, high level athletes that can play some basketball. So, and it really showed in that game. So they're like a legit threat to potentially win the SEC, especially with Rick Barnes, because Barnes is, you know, he wins games. There's just no question. I mean, he struggled obviously in the NCAA tournament times, but he wins regular season games. So I think Tennessee is going to be good. Okay. So I think we've covered national stuff. I mean, we've talked about SEC and the Pac-12 stuff. Anything else you want to hit before we get out of here?
I guess we can just like do a very quick football recap here, since we've been away from a bit. So I think the last time we spoke was before the Utah game that was stolen by the Pac-12 refs. But, you know, I still think you got to feel pretty good about the direction of the program and kind of the way the team looks overall, even though the defense isn't championship level.
Yeah. So my comment about the Arizona game is going to be that Delta does not have Wi-Fi over the Pacific Ocean. I watched like a recap of the game, but I'll let you talk about that more in depth. But I'll just note that we obviously we were missing Addison, we're missing Mario Williams, and we were still able to put up just gigantic passing yards. Now, obviously, Arizona's defense is not great, but you know, that is important, that you know, it looks like the system is working.
Yeah, and Caleb Williams should absolutely be a Heisman contender. I mean, he kind of went through like a little bit of a rough stretch there after the first half of that Stanford game. But the last two games, he's been, you know, absolutely phenomenal and has really put the team on his back. So it's a limited roster in a lot of ways, but he's just been terrific. So I think that deserves mention.
Yeah, and we're going to look, I think, to get to that. Look, you've been more correct about the team than I have, because I think preseason I was talking about 8-4, 9-3. I think we'll be probably, I guess we can still be 9-3, but I think we'll be comfortably probably 10-2 at least. Not comfortably, I think 10-2 at least. But the team has been better than I thought they would be. But to go to that, you know, to take that next step for like next season, we're going to need some transfers. I think another round of transfers on defense.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to see what's available. Now, maybe we'll be able to convince people like from, you know, kind of smaller schools to like, hey, this is your chance at the big time, because the offense is going to be stellar. It should be stellar next season. But the defense is just like a lingering thing. You just need better, especially a linebacker. I mean, we need just better personnel linebacker. You can't really get around that. But look, we'll see how we finish out the season. You know, we obviously have these games against Cal and Colorado where, you know, hopefully there's not a letdown. We just take care of business of those games. And then, you know, UCLA and Notre Dame, see how we finish the season.
Yeah, I'll make kind of two last comments here. So first off, I think we both deserve props for picking USC to cover and Utah to win in that Utah game. So I think shout out to us on that. The other thing too, and I know we've kind of mentioned this offline, is USC is going to have to really be careful with the officiating over the next couple of years here, because it cost them that Utah game, and there are lots of tight basketball games where close calls can really screw you. So it was really interesting to see Mike Bone publicly tweeting criticisms of the officials. And as a fan, you love to see that and love to see the AD sticking up for your program. But that's certainly something to watch because Kliopkov has not handled the departure well. And given his, you know, public comments of, you know, I haven't talked to a USC fan who supports the move to the Big Ten. Total bullshit, right? So it's definitely something to monitor.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great, we probably should have added this to the discussion point because I kind of just forgot about all this because all this other stuff has happened. I'm surprised. Going into that Utah game, I mean, I was genuinely surprised that we had not been more screwed in officiating to that point in the season. Obviously, the Utah thing was just a complete joke. And then, you know, the mess up against Arizona, where I guess there's like an innocent explanation there, but it's just like, I'm willing to believe that's just rank incompetence, but like, you know, somebody somewhere has got to do something about that. That's just horribly incompetent officiating. And they couldn't get their act together about it. And I worry about the basketball thing because, you know, there's nobody left fighting for SC at the, you know, Pac-12 office or anything like that. So, you know, no
apology from the Pac-12 or anything, of course, right? Yeah. Like none of that, right? Yeah. Nonsense. And you saw with Texas too. I mean, Texas is leading the Big 12 and they went up to Oklahoma State and the penalties were like 14-0 or something. Just absurd.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a problem. It's a problem everywhere. And I don't know if there's a good solution for it, but I was pleased to see Bone, like at least publicly, like sending messages there. And will that have any impact? I don't know. It kind of reminds me of when Pat Hayden like stormed down to the field to defend his coach. Like Pat Hayden was a horrific AD, but I think like USC fans love seeing that at the time. Right. So I don't know, Chase. Like I'm concerned. I echo your concerns with that.
And it's going to be, it's going to get really interesting, right? Because we're not leaving by ourselves. UCLA is also leaving, and this is the best football season they've had in like a decade. And this is potentially their best basketball team that they've had in a while. Now, I don't know if that's going to work out that way because many times they've been favored to win the conference, but you know, they're definitely national title contender and they're facing the prospect of some weird officiating in some of these games. So, I mean, like they lost that game in Tempe last year and there was some odd calls there, but that was before all of this. I mean, you know, it's going to be tough to win games in Boulder and in Tempe. Maybe in Seattle and Pullman. I mean, it's going to be a tricky time with the officiating.
Yeah, I'm going to bet that that a lot of UCLA fans on Bro are going to be unhappy after the McHale game, and there will be some official officiating shenanigans going on there, right? Because you combine like the crowd with, you know, the screw like USC and UCLA thing from the conference. And I think you're going to see some interesting calls in that game. That's for sure.
Yep. All righty. Okay. So I guess there's a football game this weekend we haven't even talked about. Do you want to pick that before we get out? And what is the line?
Yes, sure. Let's see. I think it was like 19. I want to see. Does that sound right?
It sounds right, but
21 and a half. Okay. That is, man.
Late game. Starts 7:30 on the West Coast.
Yeah. I guess I'll pick Cal to cover that just because I guess that half point does it for me. Because they're kind of a low tempo team too. And they can get you into these slugfests. Like, you know, they haven't lost by, you know, that much all season, I don't think. So I guess I'll go Cal to cover, SC to win by probably right around that margin. And I will actually be in attendance for that one.
Oh, so well, enjoy the game. And yeah, I'll go SC by 17. They don't cover, maybe even 13, but, yeah. Alrighty. We'll reconvene next week. I get probably after the Florida Gulf Coast game. So
yeah,
we'll pick our first basketball game after that.
Yeah, that's perfect. And yeah, I'll take SC to beat the Eagles.
Okay,
What
I'll stay neutral on that just for the sake of
think?
diversity of opinion. All right,
There it is.
until next time, fight on, everyone.
But